Yeah. It's Mr. Encore. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah. Check. Fantasy Sports and Politics. Ain't no other talk show hot as this. Cover every sport and we get it all right. Log on the site, you can listen tonight. Talk about the game, who in first place. You can even call up, state your own case. Football, b-ball, soccer too. Log on, ain't nobody stopping you. It's Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah, come on. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah, log on.
Well, hello. Once again, it's that time again. It's a Thursday night, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And when you, if you're listening to me right now, is this an FSP Crew show? I am the host, JT, a.k.a. The Master, and I'm always joined by my loyal and forever engaging co-host, Jeff the Joker, my fellow Jersey guy. And for the second week in a row, I got the ever-present Mr. DC himself, Mike Wright, and we make up the FSP Crew Show. The number to call in is 347-637-3220. 347-637-3220 is the place to be if you want to talk to Jeff, Mike, or me. Got a great show in store for you. We're going to talk about some NBA basketball. NBA basketball, that's redundant. We're going to talk about some basketball, okay? We're going to talk about some baseball. What's wrong with a certain pitcher? And we're going to talk about some wrestling. Yes, I'm talking about wrestling. Hardly ever talk about it, but I got to talk about this guy because the fact is he's a legend, and I want to talk about it. So without further ado, let's bring in my esteemed other co-host, Jeff the Joker and Mike Wright. Welcome, fellas. Jeff first and then Mike. How you doing?
Hey, Jerry. Thanks for the intro. Hey, Black. Glad to have you back again. It's cool.
Yeah, fortunately, it's a sad day for us wrestling fans, Jeff. The great elbow. Man, good to be here, though. Good to be here.
All right. All right, fellas, we're going to round it off. We're going to start the show off with this. In a somber note, I hate to do it like this, but I'm going to start off in a somber note. At one point, it was the WWF, the World Wrestling Federation. Now it's called the WWE. And a wrestling legend, when I used to watch wrestling, when I was really interested, this is one of the superstars of wrestling at the time. He died at a very young age. He's only 8 years older than I am, and that's a very young age, in my opinion. 69, talking about the legendary Dusty Rhodes. He passed away just recently, and he was, like I said, a wrestling legend. I hate to see these guys passing away. He passing away pretty young. A lot of these guys didn't do the right thing when they were younger. They play hard and worked hard. And quite naturally, when you do that, things have a tendency to catch up to you. And Dusty Rhodes is one of those guys that definitely played hard. His career began in the 70s and continued in the 90s. And like I said, he was a wrestling legend. And his nickname was the American Dream. And Hall of Fame wrestler and a three-time NWA. That's another wrestling organization champion. Jeff, I'm pretty sure you've got some memories of maybe of Dusty Rhodes. I don't know about if Mike got into wrestling that much. He may have and knows who Dusty Rhodes
is.
Are
you crazy? Dusty Rhodes? Man, me and my cousin used to run around doing that people's elbow all the time, man. I love Dusty Rhodes.
What are you talking about, man?
Well, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know, Black. I mean, some guys didn't get into wrestling, some did. So, you know, I just err on the air of caution. So I figured that. Well, let me ask you this then. I'm gonna go to Black first because Black sounded really like he was into Dusty Rhodes. Talk to me, Black. Dusty Rhodes and those older legends back in the 70s, 80s. Talk to me.
Man, those guys back in that era, I don't know how far Jeff goes back, but Dusty Rhodes, Ricky the Dragon, Steamboat, plenty of those guys in the WWF era, man. We love those guys. They had those arcade games at the Curry Yard where you can go in and play for 25 cents. We used to emulate all those moves, man, on the playground, man. I used to always scream. I think I kind of run out of somebody, hit somebody. Dusty! And I just let off that elbow every time.
What's your thoughts, Jeff?
Well, I mean, I don't even know where to begin with Dusty. I mean, when I first started getting into wrestling, see, that's what professional wrestling, you know, like, I mean, if you're in the Olympics, that's a serious sport, that's wrestling.
Right.
You're opening up a can of whoop tushy on somebody, that's wrestling.
Right.
And
right.
I love that term because I know McMahon hates it, you know.
Right.
So when I was getting into wrestling, I guess, in the late 70s, early 80s, you know, I was mm-hmm. barely here. I was like a fetus practically.
Right.
Dusty was more, back then, he was more of an NWA guy. He was in the WWF for a little while because, you know, these guys move around because, you know, the act gets old after a while. But he was more like an NWA guy. And in the early 80s, he was, I think, the number one wrestler for Florida Championship Wrestling, which this was right before wrestling really took off. To watch Florida wrestling, you had to, I think it was on Monday nights on Telemundo at like 11 o'clock. I'm not kidding.
Well, I hear you, Jeff. I know what you're saying.
Yeah. And that's what you did. And you know, and then the thing that is, it's so long ago, technology-wise, it was also, I mean, the broadcast was in English, but all the commercials were in Spanish, you know.
Right,
and,
right.
And it was a very good promotion. It was one of the NWA promotions. And there was a bit of a delay, maybe. It was at least 2 weeks delay, but it didn't matter because you never knew what was going on anyway. And the cool thing about it was you could see a big match, and then at the newsstand the next week, it would be in the magazine because if it was something for the other promotions, there was a lag because, you know, they had those wrestling magazines, and that was it. And since wrestling wasn't covered in the newspapers or anything, you never knew what happened. And, you know, he also wrestled a lot in Georgia, and part of his legacy was early in his career, he had a brutal tag team with a Captain Redneck, Dick Murdoch, he became very famous. Almost everybody already knew who he was by the time he went to the WWF, but there were some fans who were just like strictly WWF. And supposedly, I believe it, McMahon didn't like Dusty because he was kind of known as like an NWA guy, and I think he had affiliations with those promoters. And McMahon tried to make him look foolish with that black and yellow polka dot costume, made him look like a bumblebee.
And
he managed to do stuff like that. And then this is just one of the sad parts about it. I mean, 69, most people aspire to live past that age, you know, but there's been so many wrestlers who passed away so young. Dusty outlived many of his contemporaries. And he had a manager, or maybe she was a valet, Sapphire, when he was in the WWF, because, you know, Dusty didn't usually have a manager. And I don't know if you guys remember Sapphire. Her real name is Juanita Wright. I don't know if she's related to Black. She's from St. Louis originally. I don't know if you guys remember Sapphire. It was,
I remember Sapphire. She had the big blonde bushy head.
Yeah, she was like a big fan, and then I think Dusty pulls her into the ring, you know, and then next thing you know, she's at all his matches. And you know, they've had people like that before. Like back in the 50s, I think they had somebody, a lady called Hatpin Mary, was part of the act. You know, she'd be like ringside at all the matches, and she'd poke the bad guys with her umbrella or something. And this was kind of similar. And, you know, she had a history. She'd been involved with wrestling for a lot of years back in St. Louis. And she passed away back in the 90s. I mean, I think she was in her early 60s, maybe. And, you know, it just whenever you read something about wrestling, it's like, boom. So many people die so young. And I think a lot of it is, you know, a lot of these guys get messed up with drugs. But also a lot of these guys, I think they get messed up with they abuse the prescription medications, which could also be dangerous, you know? I think that's huge because, you know, there's a big, you know, big difference between use and abuse. And, you know, you watch a wrestling show, you see the guy doing a match for 10, 15 minutes once a week. It doesn't look that hard. But then they're doing it, you know, six nights, seven nights a week. And, you know, they take a beating and then they start, you know, self-medicating and whatnot. And that's what I think hurts a lot of these guys. But, yeah, you know, Dusty, I think did he play college football? A lot of these guys have. And there was a I don't know if there's any connection. There was a baseball player called Dusty Rhodes. I think he played for the Dodgers back in the 50s. And when Dusty was in Florida, probably one of the greatest feuds ever, he and the Prince of Darkness, Kevin Sullivan, and Dusty very serious because he had – to protect all of Florida from the forces of darkness. And he really took that on. One of the all-time wrestling feuds up there with, I think the only bigger feud I could think of was Wildfire Tommy Rich and the late Buzz Sawyer.
Wow, Jeff. You are really dating yourself about these guys. Wow. Wow. But I'm just sitting back and enjoying what you're saying because it's bringing me back to the days when I used to really sit in front of the TV and watch all these guys, Ted DiBiase, Ric Flair, and Bob Backlund, a lot of these guys, just to name a few. And like I said, these guys played hard and worked hard and quite naturally because they took such a beating night in and night out. They, just like you said, they had to self-medicate. And a lot of that catches up with you after a while. So it is what it is. Unfortunately, another guy has passed away, being Dusty Rhodes. And God bless him. And my thoughts and prayers goes out to his family and friends that such a beloved guy in wrestling and the fandom that follow wrestling has passed away. All right. Let's move on to something else I wanted to talk about here. And happens to be this, the NBA Finals. Now, I don't know how many of you guys are, I don't know if either one of you are on Facebook, I'm not sure, or if you, I know Mike Black is on Facebook, not sure if Jeff is still is or was or whatever.
I am, but Facebook. I'm not active, so
yeah.
Very sporadic.
So Mike would know what I'm talking about. Our friend, our common associate, I should say, Mr. Mac Williams, has really laid it on about the officiating in the finals and the conspiracy theorists, and Mac's one of them. The conspiracy theorists are out that they're out to get LeBron his championship despite the lack of solid talent that the Cleveland Cavaliers have. Now, I have my thoughts on this last two games, especially and the series overall so far. But I want to get Black your thoughts on it, and also Jeff's thoughts on the finals as you see it right now, and expand on what you see on both sides of both benches. Talking about the Cleveland Cavaliers, and talking about what you see with the Golden State Warriors, and then we'll go ahead.
Well, the officiating has been kind of shaky throughout the whole series, but look, you all know I'm a big Wizards fan, and that, you know, I can't stand Cleveland. Don't like LeBron, but however, this series, I mean, the guy's averaging a triple double.
Right.
I don't see how you can hate on this man right now, who's almost single-handedly with a little sidekick, a little help from down the Dover, is taking out the number one team that has 60 wins. 60 wins in the regular season. They took over out the New Orleans, over 60 wins, took out the New Orleans Pelicans, took out the Memphis Grizzlies. Golden State is legit. I don't know what's going on. I don't know if it's coaching, Steve Kerr. They're not going to the rack enough. There's too many jump shots, in my opinion, for that team. They need to be going to the hole more, because in the playoffs, everything slows down. It's wind and grind basketball. And if you can't adjust to that, there won't be any running the gun. I've never seen in the finals, unless you're talking about back in the day, where they were running the gun back and forth, like the old Showtime Lakers. But you got to find a way to grind it out, man. But I can no longer hate on LeBron. I mean, 12 assists, 10 boards? He's been averaging in this series. He's playing his ass off. I look and see the press conference the other night. Now they're talking about, oh, LeBron, your efficiency is off. They're going to find something every game to pick with this man. But this guy's playing his ass off, and I have to give it to him. He should be fine as MVP. If Cleveland is able to pull this off. But I'm impressed with what they have right now. And Black being the first-year coach and them slowing the pace down, they're slowing the pace down to a rate that they want to play. And I've been very impressed with the role players for Cleveland. Very impressed with the role players for Cleveland. They're playing good defense. They're not allowing Steph to get off. They're not allowing Clay to get off. Draymond Green, I don't know what's happened with him, but They got to have a big game tonight, because if you lose game four, this thing could really be over for Golden State.
Jeff?
Yeah, regarding the officiating, you know, I can be critical of officiating, and yeah, you know, I'm one of those conspiracy guys, or at least everybody thinks I am. But there was, and I think it was the first game, it was at the end of the first game, They called a questionable foul on LeBron, and I couldn't believe it. I'm like, whoa, I guess they're calling this straight for a change. You know, it's just, even when the refs are good, NBA officiating is not easy. You know, the guys are a lot taller than the refs and very fast and whatever. And then you get into, did Ric Flair just walk into the game? I think Ric Flair is at the game. See, you got me all distracted now. I think they've been calling it fairly straight, but then you get to the things where, some things, the refs are less likely to call late in the game, which I understand, but some people have a problem with it, you know, cause they say, well, they don't want the outcome to be determined on a whistle, but unfortunately that's the nature of the sport, you know. As long as it's not, the thing you got to watch out for is any sport, you're going to see bad calls. But when the calls are consistently going a certain way, and the classic example was, I think in 2002, the Lakers, Kings, when there was no way they were going to let the Kings win that game. And I mean, that was, they took it too far. That was an outrage, and it's still relevant because I think two of those guys are still working in the NBA.
Yes.
Now, talking about fouls, I'll tell you, J.R. Smith, I kept expecting David Blatt to pull him out of the game and start, like, knocking on his head going, hello, hello, anybody home? I mean, come on. This is supposed to be a veteran player making stupid fouls. I mean, it's ridiculous. But despite that, I can't believe for him and Shumpert together, the Knicks only got a second-round pick. I mean, the league sometimes rejects trades. I know there was also salary cap ramifications to that, but they should have gotten, and this isn't much to ask, at least another second rounder or, you know, a first rounder that, you know, non-lottery or something. But to get two guys who could start on some teams, for both of them to get a second rounder, come on. They shouldn't even allow that trade. But the thing is with Cleveland, you know, everybody knows, decimated by injuries, and it attests to the greatness of LeBron. I mean, even if they lose the series, he might have a chance to be the MVP. But using Dellavedova and the other guy, Thompson, is kind of, I don't think they were using that lineup too often earlier, but that gives Golden State a lot of defense to deal with. And this is a very interesting series. You know, the coaches' matchups, and, you know, both rookie coaches, but both of these guys have been around the game. I mean, Blatt's been coaching in Europe for many years, and Kerr has been, you know, played for a lot of times, broadcast, front office. So, you know, these aren't, you know, novices. These guys know what they're doing. But, boom, all of a sudden, out of David Lee, he was spotted. And looking really good. And the thing is, Cleveland, they got to give a way to find a way to get a little rest for LeBron, but they can't because he's everything. I mean, there's a chance at the end of this series he could lead them in all five statistical categories. It's not much of a stretch, you know?
Well, I've watched these games, and the last game especially, I thought the Golden State Warriors were sleepwalking for the most part, especially Stephon Curry. Like, he was too laid back and too West Coast. I'll put it like that, too West Coast, and laid back for three quarters. And he finally woke up in the fourth quarter and decided to play, and that's when they staged a huge comeback and barely lost the game. And that's not the first time. They played three games. Two of them went to overtime. One of them, they were down by, at one point, 20 points. And like I said, in the fourth quarter, they staged a huge comeback. And they tried to do the same thing, and it didn't pan out in the second game. I heard on the radio this afternoon that, when the commentator said it, the host said it, it made sense to me that the Golden State Warriors need a wake up and play with some sense of urgency play with some type of heart and reckless abandon, because that's what they have to match the intensity of what the Cleveland Cavaliers are pushing out. Dellavedova, J.R. Smith, Amon Shumpert, Tristan Thompson, and definitely LeBron James, who's averaging 36 points a game. 36 points a game, 13, almost 14 rebounds a game, and almost 11 assists a game.
He is playing out of his mind, man. He is doing everything.
That is crazy. Now,
and add this stat to it. Out of the three games, he's only rested for 8 minutes.
Yes. So you can imagine how it felt in the fourth quarter when Dellavedova and LeBron James were pretty much spent. Dellavedova had to get some IVs after the game and also went to the hospital because he was out of sheer dehydration because of what he put. He spent everything that he had out on that floor. Now, in my thought process, with a guy that's had to go through that, who'd been in the hospital because of dehydration, so they had to pump a whole bunch of fluids in him, and he gets what, one day off, and then he has to play again today. You got to believe that he's not going, in my opinion, and I'd be extremely surprised if he has too much in the tank in this game, because the body takes a lot and it needs time to recover. And one day is not enough to recover when you had to get pumped full of IV and fluids to get your fluid level up because you were dehydrated and you spent yourself physically. So I would think he would have a lower tolerance of reaching that limit than he had when he first did it, because the fact is he really hasn't had enough time. Old Faithful, there we go. He still hasn't had enough time to recover from what took place a few nights ago. So how long?
I'm hoping he's still hooked up to the IV. He waits 15 minutes before game time to get off. I'm hoping that's what they're doing.
Well, let me put it this way, and I put it like this. How long can he, meaning Dellavedova, and LeBron James go with and without coming up empty? Because the fact is, LeBron James, like you said, 48 minutes each game, and then you go into overtime, and he's only had rest of 8 minutes total. That's obscene. Sooner or later, your body says, I can't do this no more. You got to rest me, or I'm going to shut down on you, or I'll shut down on you. Same thing with Dellavedova. So this game, quite naturally, is a very crucial game for the Golden State Warriors, because if they lose this game, it's a wrap. They're not going to win three straight games. If they've lost three straight games, they haven't lost three straight games all year. But if they lose tonight's game, in my opinion, it's a wrap. These guys haven't been playing with the sense of urgency and the same type of heart that the Cleveland Cavaliers and company have been playing with. And just think about this. And I looked at this, and somebody, a friend of mine, pointed this out to me earlier today. You realize on the floor in the fourth quarter, there were three Knicks that were in the finals. J.R. Smith, Iman Shumpert, and David Lee. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Now, I'm just saying, Jeff.
Before you gloss over that, how do you Knicks fans feel about that?
You know, it's an annual tradition. It's like almost every year in the finals, you see guys who the Knicks usually got rid of for nothing, usually playing pretty well. I think one of the classic moments was Nate Robinson was in a doghouse in New York, playing his butt off for the Celtics a few years ago. It's crazy. I mean, and the Knicks, they're so bad, they don't even lose right, because, you know, they stunk up the league this season, and then they got red hot and won three of their last six games, enough to lose a ton of ping pong balls. That's how lame the Knicks are. They're not even good at losing. And, you know, the thing is, David Lee was a very popular player in New York, and, you know, you don't blame the guy. I mean, Yeah, they Golden State offered him a ton of money, and it's, you know, it's just the nature of the business. But he was a guy who was given an opportunity because when he started his career with the Knicks, I mean, like, he was, I think, last or second to last pick of the first round. And he got the opportunity, and he made the best of it, and he, you know, he improved his offensive game. He was always good on the boards. He's okay on defense. And then, boom, big contract, and then he disappears. And, you know, I'll tell you, Bogut, oh, my God, what happened to that guy?
I
mean, okay, you get to the point, you say, okay, it doesn't matter that he was once the first pick in the draft. That's old news, whatever. But, you know, that you get past that, it's like, come on, you could still be a good player. And he's not even looking like that anymore. You know, I don't know if he's hurt or what. I mean, you know, nobody expects him to be Wilt Chamberlain, just be a good player, you know, and he's not looking like it. But, hey, with Lee getting hot, that could cut into Bogut's minutes. But, you know, you think with, you know, LeBron, you'd want a decent center, on, you know, decent defensive center like Bogut in there, and he's more of that than Lee is. Lee is more power forward, not a great defender. But yeah, every year these former Knicks are in the finals. It's almost every year for the past 5 years. It's nuts, absolutely nuts. Maybe the problem isn't the players, even though that's what it usually is. But you know, and now the Knicks fans are paranoid that they might be bringing back Isaiah Thomas. They're easing him back in. You know, bringing him with the Liberty. I'm not kidding, because, you know, the Knicks owner has, you know, a special relationship with Isaiah. It's crazy.
Man crush. Man crush.
Considering how much money that guy cost Dolan, you know, crazy. I mean, I know people who aren't that loyal to their family, you know. And it's, believe me, he got a lot of criticism over that. Because they got somebody who was found guilty in court of a sexual harassment, and they got him running a WNBA team. Very, very strange. Big story locally.
Okay. All right. All right. Let's talk about this. And I know this may sound absurd, but I can't believe someone paid this amount of money for it. If you miss your chance, the auction ended Tuesday night with the urinal from the Silver Dome. This is crazy, man. That's why I had to say something. A urinal from the Silver Dome, signed by Barry Sanders. hey, you laughed. This urinal, and I'm looking at it right now, went for $3,000.
Oh my gosh.
On eBay. Yes. And it was like I said, it went off at it went up $400, I think, just before it closed out quite naturally on eBay. The bidding is anonymous, and the winning bidder is anonymous. The guy who put this thing on eBay is supposedly going to give some portion of it to charity, and he's looking to find Barry Sanders, or trying to get in touch with Barry Sanders' agent to find out what would be the best charity of Barry Sanders to give a percentage of the winning bid, I should say, that he's going to benefit from. So, yeah, don't ask me, man. I just saw this and I'm saying, you know what? I got to say something just to see what my guys think about somebody selling a freaking urinal that signed by a Hall of Famer. And for the life of me, I don't know why he signed it, but it's signed by Barry Sanders and they went for $3,000. $3,000. Hello. Just put it on eBay and you can sell anything. I know winning tickets, depending on what type of winning ticket it was from the Belmont, where American Pharoah won the Triple Crown. Some are being sold $2 win ticket from Belmont. Some of them are selling for $30 or $40. If it's a trifecta, if you got it straight, some people are trying to sell it for $1,000 to $1,400. And if you have a group of them of $2 winning tickets, people are trying to sell that for a lot of money. So,
what do you do with this urinal now? Do you encash it and put it in your man cave, or what do you do with it? Do you even use it? Do you just install it in the man cave and laminate the signatures? What are you supposed to do with it?
I have no idea what I would do with it. I don't know what I would, you know, I have no idea what I would do with it. I'd probably put it in the man cave as a, not a functioning urinal. I just put it in the man cave in the corner. Some is saying, you know, saying, hey, look to anybody who comes over, look, I got a signed urinal from Barry Sanders. And just to see what type of look you get from your friends or your family or whoever about what the hell you doing with a urinal in your man cave or wherever you put it. But it is what it is, and I don't know what to say. All right, we're gonna take a short break. Have a couple of promos to run up, and then we'll be right back with some more FSP sports and news or whatever. We'll be right back.
Victor Gardner began the Fantasy Sports and Politics brand with the idea of combining two of his passions into a radio show. He then learned that politics were 95% of sports. When you tune into the Fantasy Sports and Politics show every Saturday at 1 p.m. Eastern, Mr. FSP himself, Vic Gardner, and Jerry the Master Taylor will go over the weekend sports, prep you for your upcoming fantasy games, and spark a debate politicians would love to hear. That's the FSP show every Saturday at 1 p.m. on blogtalkradio.com/VICHBK. You can listen at spotonradio.web.com after the show as it streams 24/7, 365 for other informative programs as well. Information, motivation, variety.
Looking for fantasy sports advice? How about informative conversation? Look no further, as the Master Plan features two men that can help in both areas. Jerry the Master Taylor and Lance the NFL Exporter Goodman provide you with a fantasy fix live every Sunday morning on the Master Plan at blogtalkradio.com/VICHBK at 10 a.m. Eastern Time. You can listen at spotonradio.webs.com after the show as it streams 24/7, 365, and listen to other informative programs as well. That's the Master Plan, Sundays 10 a.m. Eastern on blogtalkradio.com/VICHBK and streaming at spotonradio.web.com. Information, motivation, variety, the Master Plan.
All right. Okay, we are back. And I want to talk about some boxing. I don't know if Black knows about this. Looks like it came out about 3 hours ago about a former world title holder who had to give up his belt because since March of last year, he hasn't fought a title fight. He was supposed to fight a mandatory. He owes a mandatory defense to number one contender, Victor Postol. But rather than face him next, he's planning to fight Paulie, and I always get this name mixed up, Magny Nagy or whatever his name is, on August 1st at the Barclays Center in Brooklyn. I'm talking about none other, former now junior welterweight champion. Like I said, he hasn't defended his belt since March of 2014. And he's going to fight his third non-title fight bout in a row. Was left with no choice but to relinquish his WBC world title on Thursday or have it stripped from him. And I'm talking about Danny Garcia. Danny Garcia had a conversation that with the WBC president, Mauricio Suleiman, a nice upstanding gentleman, on Thursday, and Garcia relinquished his belt. Now the WBC also announced that it would order Postol, which is the number one contender, to face Lucas
Matthysse
for its vacant 140-pound title. I'm going to Black first and then to Jeff. Black, what are your thoughts? Danny Garcia, since last year, over a year ago, hasn't fought a title fight, instead dealing with non-contenders just to get a paycheck because he wanted to hold on to his title. Was he afraid of Victor Postol, or he just, I don't know. What's your thoughts on that?
I don't think he was afraid of Victor Postol, but you look at Garcia's last two fights, especially that last fight with one of the DMV's own, Lamont Peterson. He lost that fight. He even admitted that after the fight. But they still gave the fight to Danny Garcia. I don't know. His career is this taking a downward turn? I'm not sure if it's training or what, but he hasn't looked good his last couple of fights, so it's not surprising that they stripped him of the belt. Now, Postol Matthysse could be a good battle, but I'm not surprised for the Danny Garcia news at all. I haven't been too impressed with him.
What's your thought then, Jeff?
You know, I don't follow boxing much, but I'm somewhat familiar with Garcia for strange reason, because I used to work with a Danny Garcia, which as well, there's probably a lot of Danny Garcias running around. It's probably a very common name. I don't know a heck of a lot about him. I mean, there's so many titles for a good fighter. Not to have one is almost an embarrassment. And, you know, the non-title fights he's been having, he's been over the weight. I wonder, I mean, I don't know if he's a guy who has a problem making a weight. I wonder if he gets a title again, if he's going to have a problem making a weight. You know, which, of course, that's one of those things as a fan, it's real easy making a weight. But when you're the guy who's got to do it, it's a lot harder. But that's a big part of boxing is making the weight. And a huge part of boxing. And it's also a big part of horse racing for the jockeys. That is huge. And, you know, that's the downfall of a lot of fighters and a lot of jockeys is making the weight.
Garcia still holds the WBA title. And a decision on that hasn't been announced on the status of that title. I can see that there may be a problem with him in the WBA, and that may be shortly coming down the road. I didn't know that he paid Postol a six-figure fee to step aside and allow Garcia to face title holder Lamont Peterson in a non-title fight at 143 this past April. And also the deal, and the deal call for, and the deal call for Pasta to get a spot on the undercard, and Doug Garcia will either defend him against him next or vacate. So quite naturally, and I'm reading this, and says it was an open secret in boxing circles that Garcia was never going to face Pasta, and that became official on Thursday. So I gotta believe that he didn't want no parts of this, just Ukrainian, and decided to step aside and let somebody else take the beating and not him. So we'll wait and see what happens against this Mathesis, and they both those camps, Postol and Mathesis, said they want this want to make this fight. So that should be a pretty good fight. I don't know too much about this Pasto. I've seen Mathesis fight. You know anything about this Pasto, Black?
He's a good fight, a good up-and-coming fight. That should be a nice fight, but I haven't thought of him too much. But the bounce I did see of him, he's a good fighter.
27-0, 11 knockouts, 31 years old. Wow. Okay. I'm not sure about this guy. I've never heard of this guy before, so it is what it is. All right. What else I want to talk about here?
You got a good one coming up in New York on Saturday, which hopefully I can make the trip. I've been approved for credentials, but I don't know how it's going to look for me Saturday. I have so many things to do down here. But Nicholas the Axeman Walters
will be versus fighting Miguel
Square Garden. Yeah, on the HBO card coming up, HBO After Dark.
Versus Mariagi.
Yep.
For the featherweight title.
Yep, and on our, on the undercard.
Mike Reed.
Vidal, and also Mike Reed, exactly. A friend of the show.
Yep, I can see that. Mike
on
Reed
the
versus...
of the Puerto Rican, on the eve of the Puerto Rican Day Festival.
Okay. They got who else is in here besides Mike Reed versus Luis Joel Gonzalez? Who else are you interested in here, Black? I'm seeing these bouts.
Felix El Demonte Verdejo.
Felix Verdejo versus Ivan Najera?
Felix El Demonte Verdejo. Yeah, this will be his HBO debut.
Okay. All right.
He's making the first fight of defense of his WBO.
Lightweight.
Yeah, lightweight title. I guess Ivan Bam Bam the header.
You know, to me, quite naturally, because I don't see anything in the heavyweights. And it seems
you got Beyonce Wilder. He's fucking the guy named Melina. I mean, not much to see there. I think most people would be tuned into the HBO card, but yeah, Deontay Wilder is also fighting this weekend.
Oh, versus Eric Molina in Alabama on Showtime.
Yeah, yep. But I think most people would be tuned to that HBO card.
Yeah, I'm looking at I guess the 13th. It's the 13th Saturday. Yeah, I'm looking at the different venues, and I don't see anything worth that jumps out at me except for Alabama, and New York. They got quite a few things going on in California, England, Texas, and other places of the country or the world. But it seems like the main focus is in New York and maybe a little bit in Alabama. So.
Yeah, if I'm able to make it up, I'll definitely give you guys a call later. They approved me of my credentials like 3 days ago. But it was so last minute, so I have to check and see.
All right. Let me what else I want to talk about here?
My guy didn't do it, DeSormo.
Who? DeSormo? No. Victor
wasn't on the winning horse.
Victor Espinoza, who this is the third time to charm. He's been in this he'd been in this situation before. And this time he was on a very dominant horse. I don't know if I'm pretty sure you guys watched it or watched the replay of it. And there was never any doubt from start to finish who was going to win that race. Especially at the top of the stretch when no horse even came to him. In fact, the horse is kind of like what they coined a frame, a phrase, I should say. When a horse tires out and he's got nothing left, he spits the bit. And the horses that were behind American Pharoah seemed like they spit the bit out and had nothing for a horse that pulled away going to the finish line. Very impressive. Let me put it that way. I saw all three races. I saw the Kentucky Derby, and then my jaw dropped because his pedigree in the mud in Pimlico down by your way, Black, said that he could run in the mud, and run he did. He ran about 10 lengths, if I'm not mistaken, and it was very easy on that. That's a speed favoring track, and he seemed to love the slop. So I'm thinking he didn't get taxed really in the Preakness. So he had a lot of left in the tank going into the Belmont, and that type of race. Excuse me, a mile and a half fit him to a T, meaning that. It's a front runners type of race. Most horses that win their race go to the front because at a mile and a half, you try to dictate the pace. And at the top of the stretch in Belmont, if you're not near the lead, you're not going to close on a horse that's on the lead because it's such a long and grueling race. And it's even that more impressive because the simple fact is that I think there was a couple of horses, two the most, maybe three, that ran in the Kentucky Derby. And for the most part, American Pharoah was the only horse that ran all three races, meaning the Kentucky Derby, the Preakness, and the Belmont. All the other horses took shots at him, either in the Kentucky Derby, in the Preakness, or the Belmont. So that's even that more impressive because they had horses that were targeting him, especially in the Belmont, that skipped the Preakness or even skipped the Kentucky Derby to get a shot at him in the Belmont, and he still dominated him. So his next stop, usually – And what happens is that the Kentucky Derby winner and the Preakness winner, quite naturally, been 37 years since a Triple Crown winner back in 78, who was affirmed, goes to either two places in the summer. Either they'd stop off in New Jersey in Monmouth Park, running the $1 million race or $1.5 million, I forget what it is, the Haskell, or they go up to upstate New York in Saratoga and run in a Travers, which is another $1 million race or more. American Pharoah is a front running horse, speed horse. Saratoga is a deeper track and it's a tiring track for front running horses. Monmouth Park is a front runner's track. A speed track. So, in my opinion, that American Pharoah is probably going to wind up in New Jersey in Monmouth Park, and they normally have 40,000 to 50,000 people on a decent day in Monmouth Park on a Haskell. That could easily escalate up to 75,000 to 100,000. I don't know how they're going to fit all those people on that track, but you got a Triple Crown winner wherever that horse goes to compete, you could almost guarantee that it's going to be double the normal big event that they have there. So
how much money does Bob Baffert stand to make now that his horse is a Triple Crown winner?
Well, Bob Baffert's a trainer. So the two guys from Teaneck, and I can't remember their name. There's two guys from Teaneck, New Jersey, a father and son. And the son is the manager of the stable or whatever, a racing manager, whatever that is. And when he won the Triple Crown, meaning American Pharoah, the horse's value went up to $20 million. So, and I think his stud fee is be astronomical because now he's the Triple Crown winner. You know, you can imagine if you win a Kentucky Derby, your stud fee goes up incrementally. You win a Kentucky Derby in the Preakness, now it's going to go up a little bit more. Now you're a Triple Crown winner, you can get top dollar for his sperm. he's worth big time bucks now. I mean, he was worth a lot of money after he won, like I said, the Triple Crown and the Preakness. But now that $20 million is probably, I'm pretty being conservative about the amount of money that the horse is worth now. Stud fee is astronomical. You got to have some bucks to even go into the same ask for anything from American Pharoah for a stud fee. So, all right, we got 3 minutes left in the show. I've talked quite a bit up until this point. I'm going to give you guys the floor. I've made left out some news and notes in sports. I'm going to give you guys an opportunity to espouse on whichever you want to espouse on. I'm going to go to Jeff first and then Black, and then we get the heck out of here.
Just to keep talking about horses, I think Ahmed Zaya is the name of the gentleman who is fortunate enough to own American Pharoah. Yes. I get the impression that he and his son are very keen on keep racing the horse, which surprises me a lot because this is going way back, I think, to affirm the Seattle Slough that as soon as they win the Triple Crown, they're afraid to race the horse for a couple reasons, because the horse is worth a fortune in syndication is what they call it. Because of those syndication fees, because heaven forbid he breaks a leg or he has a really bad race, that could hurt the value. I mean, it's nice. It's good for the sport that they keep racing them and they got insurance. But I'll tell you, if I was the insurance company, I'd jack up the fees. You know, I'm very surprised that they sound like they were very keen on keep racing the horse. It's nice, but I think eventually they're going to realize, hey, we got to play it safe. Because let me tell you, I saw a few years ago the highest paid athlete in the world was a retired racehorse. And he wasn't even that big of a winner. I mean, he never won a Triple Crown race, but he had a great pedigree. And the bottom line was, in syndication, he was incredible. I mean, it was almost guaranteed money every time he sired a colt, you know. And he was, I think he was getting like $500,000 per syndication, whatever. Not too shabby. Highest paid athlete in the world. Good for him.
All right, Black, what's your final thoughts?
I don't have too much. Want to send a big shout out to my man Bryce Harper and his league leading 20 home runs. We got the Yankees out of there the other day, so that's good. Hopefully, that can start a win streak for my Nets. But before we go off the air, I'd like to get your guys' predictions for tonight's game.
Golden State.
Yeah, same here. I think they're going to even it up.
What's your thoughts?
That's right. I think the Cavs is about 102.
Okay. We'll wait and see. It's game four in Cleveland, and we'll see if LeBron and Dellavedova and company can push another one out of there before they go back to Golden State. We come to the end of the show. I want to thank Mike Black Wright and Jeff the Joker for joining me again tonight. Tune in next week, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, where we'll be jockeying it up again. And this has been the FSP crew, and we're out.
Thursday night.
Wrong, Jerry. How wrong is that? This one.
Yeah. It's Mr. Encore. Fantasy Sports and Politics crew. Yeah. Check. Fantasy Sports and Politics.